welcome, and thanks for joining us for another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. We're ready to run down the top news from this past week in Indiana and U.S. agriculture. I'm farm broadcaster Eric Pfeiffer, and I don't know if you heard, people have been kind of quiet about it, but there was an election this past week. We'll talk about that and the impacts to agriculture in just a moment. We'll get a harvest update from eastern Indiana and how many bushels tar spot took from us this year. Purdue came out with their monthly survey on how farmers are feeling about the future of the ag economy. And the guys at Purdue conducting the survey can't figure out what you're so excited about. CJ Miller has that story coming up. Sabrina Halverson also joins us, as does Andy Eubank, with an update on the markets after an interesting week following the Tuesday election and a USDA report on Friday. Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin has his Indiana Farm Forecast on the way as well. Let's begin with the election and break down what we know. Former President Trump will once again be President Trump come January as he retakes the White House. More on that in a moment. There weren't any big surprises here in Indiana. Republican Congressman Jim Banks was successful in his bid to win the Senate seat vacated by Senator Mike Braun when Braun decided to run for governor. Braun, also a Republican, was successful in his race for governor, despite some suggesting an upset in that race. Braun defeated Democrat Jennifer McCormick by a 13-point margin. That means Micah Beckwith is the new lieutenant governor-elect and will be the new Secretary of Agriculture, leading the Indiana State Department of Ag. There were no real surprises with Indiana House races either. There will be three new Indiana congressmen, Republicans Jefferson Shreve, representing House District 6, former State Senator Mark Messmer, representing District 8, and Marlon Stutzman, if you can really call him new, representing District 3. Stutzman replaces Banks, who replaced Stutzman back in 2017. If you're looking for more in-depth analysis, you'll want to tune into the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. It's available now in the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app or wherever you listen to podcasts. We break down all the results at the national and state level and what it means for agriculture with Indiana native and former USDA Deputy Secretary Chuck Connor, and also with John Ketzenberger with the Nature Conservancy. Now, back to the White House. With President Trump returning, one of Indiana's top ag leaders says his ag policies will greatly benefit Hoosier farmers and rural Americans. CJ Miller has the story.
I think Trump is a world-class negotiator, and I'm confident that he'll support the U.S. agriculture economy.
And that's Kip Thom, former U.S. ambassador to the United Nations Agencies for Food and Agriculture under President Trump. He's also a farmer based in Kosciuszko County in northern Indiana. Ambassador Thom says that Trump will look at taking President Biden's current ag policies in a completely different direction.
We talked about trade. We went from nearly a $37 billion surplus in the early days of Trump to now we're projecting a $42 billion deficit in our food and ag trade. We know that farmers' incomes are off nearly 40% from 2022 to 2024. We know that regulations have grown by almost $1.67 trillion, and that's highly inflationary because when those regulations come into place or new taxes, that all gets handed back to the consumers or those of us in a space where we take the prices that we're given for our products. So I think those are three key areas that's got to get under control, and I think Trump's going to focus on those.
And even though many farmers and ag professionals are concerned about the impact of tariffs and ag trade with Trump back in office, Thom says that Trump will not push for trade deals unless they benefit America's farmers.
I know that he understands the ag economy. He understands 75% of the people that he would impact if he puts strict tariffs on are going to be impacted negatively. So he understands rural America. Now, as we look at those tariffs, let's understand something. Let's take the example of China. We're importing nearly $500 billion worth of goods and products from China. They're only buying $350 billion from us. What's fair about that? So I believe we really need to work hard to make sure that we have more of a balanced trade with countries like China. If they want to keep up their $500 billion in sales to us, well, they need to be buying more ag commodities.
Thom adds that Trump would not have been reelected if it wasn't for the support he received from rural Americans.
Nearly 75% of rural America, farmers and ranchers, those involved in food systems, those living in our rural communities, supported Donald J. Trump as the President of the United States. He knows that. We continue to remind him of that. And I feel strongly that President Trump wants to see and support a strong ag economy and rural America.
Ambassador Tom and I also discussed the farm bill and preserving tax cuts that are set to expire next year. And that's all part of our full conversation, which you can hear at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm CJ Miller.
All right, CJ, thanks. Kip Thom, by the way, one of many names being floated around as a potential nominee for USDA Ag Secretary. Also, another name being floated around, Ted McKinney, also an Indiana native. Now that the election is in the rearview mirror, will your lawmakers pass a new farm bill now in the lame duck session, or will they wait until a new session starts in January? Sabrina Halverson weighs in.
While there is a ready, bipartisan-supported version released by House Agriculture Committee Chair Glenn G.T. Thompson, it remains unknown if it will pass before the new Congress begins.
There's a good bill out there. It's ready to move.
Ethan Lane, Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, says the proposed bill is strong.
Look, G.T. Thompson has done a phenomenal job. He has crafted a really popular farm bill that was voted out of the House Ag Committee on a bipartisan basis. The farming community, the ranching community likes it. We just need to move the bill.
Whether the current political landscape either helps or hinders the farm bill's progression remains to be seen. With the Senate expected to shift under the new Republican voices and the House potentially remaining under Republican control, the bill stands a good chance of moving forward quickly in the new Congress. However, there's also the risk that competing legislative priorities in the new administration could delay it. And Lane points out, Democrats may want to push the bill through now to get a voice in before the new Congress takes over.
This isn't something that should need to be relitigated. The bill is there. It's just time to move it. Whether that's in lame duck or early in the new administration, we're going to be asking for that and pushing for it.
Read more at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm Sabrina Halverson.
We have plenty more farm news to come here on Hoosier Ag this week, but right now it's time for the markets and time to say hello to Andy Eubank. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Eric. It was a higher close for the markets on USDA report day on Friday. We'll have settlements coming up, but some market analysis to kick us off. I got that from Brian Basting of Advanced Trading and spoke with him right near the end of the Friday session. Brian, USDA spoke in the November report, and there was little market reaction, but where we did see a change was a sell-off in beans, which turned higher after the report. USDA did lower yield on corn and soybeans, but the soybean number also led to a drop in ending stocks. Trade seemed to like that number somewhat.
Really looking at a surprise for the November report. The yield for beans was dropped 1.4 bushel per acre nationally compared to what it was in October. That's a pretty strong decline this time of year. Usually we don't see that strong of a decline this late in the harvest period. But nice to see, though, there were some exceptions. One of them was Indiana. We did see a two-bushel increase in the Indiana soybean yield. The bottom line is, yes, the carryout for beans for 24-25, Andy, was below the trade estimate. In fact, below the lowest trade estimate was 475 to 585. It came in at 470 with that reduction in the size of the crop. Size of the crop was down 121 million bushels from what it was in October. Carryout at 470.
That is insight from Brian Basting, economist at Advanced Trading. Brian's number is 309-664-2314. Here are the Friday settlements up all day or for the most part in the corn market, and a finish 3.5 cents higher for the December contract, 431. March corn, 444 and a quarter, up 3.75. May up 3.75, 451.5. January beans, 4 cents higher, 1030 and a quarter. March up 6, 1043.5, and 1056.75 on the May, up 6 cents. A penny up, December wheat, 572.5, and a penny and a half down, March contract, 587.5. The meats lower, December live cattle down 212, 183.70, and December lean hogs, 80.42, down 77. That's the market recap. Much more still to come here on Hoosier Ag Today. I'm Andy Eubank. This is Hoosier Ag This Week.
From the Farm Bill to foreign farmland ownership and international trade, ag policy is having a big impact on Indiana farming operations. The Hoosier Ag Today Indiana Ag Policy Podcast provides in-depth coverage on these and many other important and complex issues. Get the details behind the headlines with the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, hosted by Eric Pfeiffer. You can find it at HoosierAgToday.com, the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app, and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
We've got a split decision for the weekend, but overall, the next 10 days look pretty dry to me. I'm Chief Meteorologist Ryan Martin with Hoosier Ag Today's Weekend Weather Outlook. So here as we go through the weekend, we're looking at well above normal temperatures, and honestly, I think that continues for a large part of the next 2 weeks. We had some concern earlier this past week that maybe we could see a major cold snap coming toward the end of this upcoming week, and it would put an end to the growing season, because I still don't think we've seen a complete end of the growing season in some areas. It depends on the actual plant as to whether or not you're still growing or producing. I think I mentioned earlier this week in one of the Hoosier Ag Today broadcasts, there are some things in my garden that are still producing. I picked some peppers this past week. So we haven't seen an end to the growing season in all areas yet, and I'm not sure that we see any significant change over the next couple of weeks. In the near term, we do have a little bit of moisture. I think your Saturday turns out partly to mostly sunny, with clouds increasing late this afternoon and into this evening. Scattered rain showers come through as a frontal boundary tries to push through overnight tonight through midday tomorrow. I think we have to put in anywhere from a tenth to three quarters of an inch, with coverage around 75% of the Hoosier State. So there's some moisture here. But recall that the last system to come through had potential to do a lot more than it did. I'm not saying this one's going to have a swing and a miss, but I'm not projecting big rains out of this. Decent rains, rains that are good for, you know, cover crops or anything like that, but not gully washing rains in the least. Moving forward then, we put together a dry Monday, Tuesday, and I think most of Wednesday now. Our next frontal boundary is going to be coming through overnight Wednesday night into and through Thursday. Monday through Wednesday, I still think we're above normal. Good sunshine, fairly fast drying. The thing that really hamstrings our drying at this point in time is sun angle. We're just not seeing much of the sunshine through the daytime hours, as we are now almost a month away from the shortest day of the year. So sun angle is a big, big deal here. But still, we're looking at some decent drying. The front on Wednesday brings us anywhere from, again, a tenth to probably three quarters of an inch. Most of us are going to be in that half inch or less range. I'm looking at 100% coverage across the Hoosier State. I think this front gets everybody. But by Thursday afternoon, we are drier and getting sunshine to come back. We should be partly to mostly sunny for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Little hints of moisture trying to come back late Sunday afternoon into Monday of next week, but I don't think it's a big shot of moisture. And behind it, the western and central United States looks mostly wide open, so I suggest we are staying mostly dry here, watching a system in the Pacific Northwest maybe for midweek the following week. I'm Ryan Martin.
Farming smarter. Well, that's something we need more of in these tough economic times. And to farm smarter, you need the right tools, like the Hoosier Ag Today e-newsletter. Every morning, a roundup of the latest farm news, a statewide ag weather forecast, and a recap of the markets is delivered to your email inbox. Start your day smarter. Sign up for the Hoosier Ag Today e-newsletter. It's free. Sign up today, get smarter tomorrow at HoosierAgToday.com and the Hoosier Ag Today mobile app.
Welcome back. Thanks for joining us on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm Eric Pfeiffer from Hoosier Ag Today. And some farmers are rapidly approaching the finish line, while I would say many others are already taking their victory lap on this year's harvest. Tar spot, the dreaded corn disease, was found in all 92 Indiana counties this year and had varying yield impacts. I spoke earlier this week with Pioneer agronomist Brian Schrader.
I would say in my geography on the eastern side of the state of Indiana, anything south of State Road 26 was impacted quite substantially. As we got later planting windows north of State Road 26 because of the early rains, it wasn't as bad. It did come in, but it came in late. But for those folks that were affected in those early planting windows, it's not uncommon, even with fungicide applications, especially if the timing was a bit off, to hear of 40, 50 bushel yield reductions because of tar spot.
Schrader says farmers also reported very poor stock quality on the eastern side of the state.
Now, again, with tar spot, that was related, but because we ended up with such a significant level of drought stress late, the corn hybrid had to go to the stock to try to fill the ear because conditions were so good early when we set ears. And so we had a lot of stock cannibalization late, just trying to get those ears filled. And even with the drought stress, I'm amazed at some of the yield numbers that I'm hearing in these areas that were so severely drought stressed.
Given all the challenges from this year, Schrader credits farmer management and modern genetics for the better than anticipated yields. You can hear my full interview with Schrader at HoosierAgToday.com. Get in touch with your Pioneer representative to start putting a plan together for next year by visiting pioneer.com/findmyrep. Each month, Purdue's ag economists like to check in on you farmers. They survey 400 of you across the U.S., asking how you feel about the future of the ag economy. C.J. Miller reports how this month's results came as a bit of a surprise for those who conducted the survey.
One of the things that I think might be going on here is people are a little more optimistic about 25 than they are 24.
And that's Dr. Michael Langemeyer, Associate Director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture. For their monthly Purdue Ag Economy Barometer Survey, just 23% of producers expect their farm's financial condition to get worse over the next 12 months. And that's a sharply lower response this month compared to last month's response of 38%. We're expecting their farm finances to get worse in 2025.
I have to admit, the people that responded to this survey this month are seeing something different than I'm seeing, because I'm not as optimistic. I'm not pessimistic, but I'm not as optimistic.
Langemeyer says that's because input prices remain on the higher side, while grain prices continue to be on the lower side.
They kind of view the downturn that we've seen here in 2024 as being transitory, and actually think maybe we're going to see kind of a rebound of sorts in 2025.
And that's Dr. Jim Mintert, director of the Purdue Center for Commercial Agriculture.
Again, a surprisingly optimistic survey this month, and they were consistent across the board. I mean, the one thing that might have influenced this a little bit was the fact that we have heard so many very positive yield reports this fall. And that would maybe provide a little bit of a boost, I suppose.
You can find the full results of the Purdue Ag Economy Barometer Survey at HoosierAgToday.com. I'm C.J. Miller.
USDA recently confirmed the first case of H5N1 bird flu in a pig. Dr. Megan Niederwerder, executive director of the Swine Health Information Center, says after the virus jumped from poultry to the beef herd, they knew there was a possibility of it moving into pork as well.
Well, we certainly knew it was a risk. And I think one of the aspects of this introduction and first detection in swine is really thinking about what type of herd it was detected in and the fact that animals of different species were housed together. So this was a backyard small farm operation in Oregon that had mixed species that were housed together. They shared water sources and shared equipment across poultry, swine, sheep, and goat.
The pigs were tested after the poultry began showing clinical signs of infection.
The impetus of the investigation was the poultry had clinical signs on the farm. They had 70 birds on the farm. They were showing clinical signs of illness. They were tested for highly pathogenic avian influenza and found positive. They tested the animals on site out of an abundance of caution. The swine on site were not clinical. They displayed no clinical signs, but one of those pigs, there were five pigs on site, one of them was positive for the virus, and they euthanized those hogs to perform additional diagnostic analysis because this was the first detection in any hog.
With this development, biosecurity must be top of mind for all producers, no matter where they're located.
What are the biosecurity risks? How can we prevent exposure to wild birds, but also think about operational connections to poultry and dairy farms, reducing the risks of feral swine exposure and protecting the health of our U.S. swine industry?
For more information, you should visit swinehealth.org. There's a link on our website, HoosierAgToday.com. Sudden death syndrome has been one of the leading causes of soybean yield loss for years. But how does red crown rot, a newer and rising disease threat, relate to SDS? Matt Geiger, Agronomic Service Representative with Syngenta, explains.
Sudden death syndrome is a disease that gets in your soybean crop early in the season. You don't often see expressions of the disease until late reproductive stages, even though the infection happened months and months ago. That causes a sudden death. You see this leaf scorch late in the season, it can wipe the plants out pretty rapidly because it basically makes them shut down. Once you see this foliar leaf scorch late in the season, the pods won't fill all the way. You might abort some pods toward the top of the plant as well.
And Geiger calls red crown rot SDS's nastier cousin because the challenge is distinguishing between the two because the symptoms are nearly identical. But he says growers do have a solid option to protect against SDS, red crown rot, and soybean cyst nematode.
We've actually got a product that's an all-in-one, and it's called Saltro Fungicide Seed Treatment. Very good product, and it's also very safe on the soybeans.
You can read more on this and find other farm news anytime, HoosierAgToday.com. Stick around, still more Hoosier Ag This Week on the way.
Ag Bioscience, the number one ag tech podcast globally, is now available on video. Hear the latest from innovators in food, animal health, plant science, ag tech, and agriculture.
What is the thing? What is the thing that most students are trying to solve for? Is it impact? Is it vocational pursuit? Is it finances? Is there any universal truth that you say, you know what, this is what my generation's really striving to do?
I would say they're striving for purpose. A lot of people want to do impactful things that matter, but also things that they're passionate about. And I know that's even one for me as well. And me, for my job, I know I am chasing. I've been told since I was a young girl, find what you love, go crazy, and the money and everything else that you may want will follow. But finding something that is your passion, that's probably, I would say, is the biggest thing for all of us.
Get more episodes online at agrinovisindiana.com. Click on podcasts. Also available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you again for joining us here on Hoosier Ag This Week. I'm CJ Miller with Hoosier Ag Today, and Veterans Day is coming up on Monday, November 11th. If you're a veteran or a future veteran who is actively serving in the armed forces, we honor you and we thank you for your service to our country. Well, speaking of veterans, there's a brand new award to honor veterans who are farmers. And that very first award is going to a retired Army colonel from right here in Indiana.
Just wanted to give back to veterans. I just enjoy helping them and seeing them get to a good place after they come back.
And that's Joe Ricker, who operates At Ease Orchard near the town of Wilkinson in Hancock County. He's also the first recipient of the Veteran Farmer Award of Excellence, which is presented by American Farm Bureau. The new award recognizes veterans for excellence in farming who are also positively impacting their local communities. Ricker retired after 30 years in the Army and then opened a farm to help other veterans.
So I did about a year in Iraq and I did about a year in Afghanistan. A lot of the people I served with always mentioned beekeeping, and I picked up that passion. I decided an orchard just blends so nicely with the bees, you know, as a pollinator. And it kind of just took off.
Ricker says he understands the struggles that many veterans face.
We've been in different environments that most people that aren't veterans, sometimes they understand, sometimes they don't, but it's a difficult environment to try to adjust to. And then with that said, you know, being amongst veterans, you kind of open up a little more. You can say, hey, do you remember this? You kind of have that camaraderie where people understand what you're going through.
He says that beekeeping and working on a farm can be therapeutic for veterans.
I think it helps veterans. It gives them a mission. It gives them a reason to wake up. It's a little bit like the military, and there's always a little bit of danger in it because no matter how thick your bee suit is, you could still get stung.
At Ease Orchard is a nonprofit organization, so the money that's raised goes back to the farm to help those veterans in need.
We do have a couple Indiana State Department of Agriculture grants that also help fund us, but we want to continue on, make it sustainable where people come back from overseas or get out of the service, have the opportunity then to get into beekeeping if that's what's right for them.
American Farm Bureau will present Ricker with the Veteran Farmer Award at their upcoming convention in San Antonio this January. To learn more about At Ease Orchard and how Ricker and his team are helping veterans in need, visit ateaseorchard.com. You can also find that link at our website, HoosierAgToday.com. And finally on today's show, it's a story that truly is all-American. A woman from Indonesia immigrates to Greensburg, Indiana, and opens a restaurant. Thanks to a collaboration with local farmers, she's now the owner of Mayasari Tempeh, a production facility that makes food items from local soybeans.
When Maya first came to town, her daughter and I went to school together. One day, she asked me about soybeans.
And that's Decatur County farmer Nick Stewart talking about his collaboration with Mayasari Effendi. When she first moved to Greensburg and opened Mayasari Indonesian Grill, she sought out Nick to help bring her soybeans for a specialty item called tempeh.
She calls me up and says, hey, I want to start making tempeh here, so I need soybeans. I said, okay, what kind of soybeans do you need? She goes, I don't know, I just need soybeans to try it. Okay. So from there, it just kind of kept expanding.
Mayasari started using those soybeans to manufacture tempeh chips called Mayasoya. They're being sold at Fresh Time stores across the state.
Then the next thing I know, she's buying a bean splitter, and we got that installed at our plant. And she goes, so I think I need a special type of soybean here. And I say, okay, so what kind of special type of soybean do you need? And she says, well, I'm looking for some with a high protein that's non-GMO with a clear hilum. I said, okay, well, that is some that we can find.
Now, with the help of Nick and other local farmers, they're providing Mayasari with soybeans to mass produce tempeh and tempeh chips to ship back to Indonesia and around the world. Nick says it's a win-win for both her company and soybean growers across southeastern Indiana.
The end goal for us at the end of the day is to leave a farm to my kids that they can farm on. And realistically, that comes down to developing local markets for our product at this point. If all of a sudden we start losing out on this trade, we're losing money. So we have to figure out ways to backfill those dollars here locally. And this is a huge step forward in that.
Read more about the collaboration between Indiana soybean producers and Mayasari Tempeh in Greensburg at HoosierAgToday.com. And with that, we turn out the lights on another edition of Hoosier Ag This Week. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast version. You can find that at HoosierAgToday.com. Once again, on behalf of all of us here at Hoosier Ag Today, we salute all of our veterans, not just on Veterans Day, but every single day of the year. If you're a veteran, thank you for your service to our country. For Eric Pfeiffer, Andy Eubank, Sabrina Halverson, and Hoosier Ag Today's chief meteorologist, Ryan Martin, I'm CJ Miller, Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.